You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 95. Today is Thursday, April 13th, and this is my first live baseball show of the season, Steve. Super happy to be here. We got a great episode ahead to add or not to add. We are going through a waiver wire special because that's what we're trying to do this time of year is catch a little lightning in a bottle. Who's going to be the Spencer Strider? Who's going to be the next bat that just emerges and you can ride into the playoffs and beyond? It's going to be a great show, Steve. I am pumped. It is my, kind of welcome back to the pod. Shout out to Dan Weber for the great show you guys did. And I really enjoyed it, enjoyed the shout outs. India was nice, but it was also an extra headache early on in the season to try to make the moves and set the lineups with 11 hours of a time zone change, but I'm back in the seat and it feels great to be talking baseball with you with some actual stats to talk through. Steve, how's it going?
Yeah, it's great to have you back. We've got a nice rapport here, so I'm used to you handling the hosting duties very smoothly and then kicking it to me and keeping things moving along. So I feel great to have you back as well, but it's nice. We had that show right on opening day the day before, so we were super excited, but then like to not talk about it, and obviously we texted a little bit, but the time difference and everything, I'm glad to have you back and glad we're doing it, and I think it's a great episode topic to sort of get caught up and get right back into it.
Yeah, it was brutal, man. I was on the tarmac in O'Hare in Chicago getting ready to take flight, and it was that first Braves game. I'm trying to think who that was. Was it Corbin in the Nationals?
Yes,
and,
yes.
Like, my flight is leaving. We should be in airplane mode. I am not in airplane mode. I'm, like, watching Austin Riley bat for me. It's like, I got to watch one of my guys play. And he took a walk, and I, like, put my fist in the air and then went on airplane mode, and I was like, all right, well, let's see if because we have a running joke that if you don't check your lineup, like, every 10 minutes, like, the fantasy gods will reward you with a positive stat line. Like, if you've ever, like, been at a wedding or, you're away from your phone for 5 hours, your stats will look better if you just check and run and go, as opposed to, like, checking it every 5 minutes.
I totally buy into that. I would, like, try to say, all right, I'm going to bed before the West Coast games because I am horrible luck when I look at my phone every 5 minutes. Yes. And just, get aggravated over every oaf or whatever. I firmly believe in, like, if you don't look, it does a lot better. I'm horrible at not looking. Maybe that's Same. Why my teams stink again, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm not off to a bad start, actually. I had a massive win in the home league, Raz Slam. I don't think I'm in first in my little flight anymore, but I was for a while, and I think we were both doing pretty good in the overall, Steve. So, I mean, knock on wood, it's been so far so good for me. Like, Gausman's dealing, Nico Horner's panning out, so I'm liking it compared to last year where, like, everything seemed to be falling apart for me, but it's super early, of course, but... You're struggling a little bit.
I'm first in turf and 17th overall.
There you go.
And Brad Slam, yeah, 34th overall, fourth in my league. TGFBI, I'm currently sixth. I'm so good at finishing in the middle of the pack in those leagues. I just don't know what it is. My on the wire league is off to a rough start. My home league, I have a fine record, but my offense absolutely stinks. I think I have 8 home runs through 2 weeks. And after having a bad offense, last year in my home league where I traded for Soto, that didn't work out. Devers, that didn't work out. To, like, start the first 2 weeks with just 8 home runs is – my mood is just so bad because of it.
Well, we're turning it around tonight, Steve. Yeah, we got waiver wires to talk through because everyone wants to make moves. You get kind of a little stir crazy if it's been 5 days you haven't made a move. So, great show ahead, folks. Thank you for tuning in. Housekeeping, you can follow us on always, as always, on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. We got about 15 names to jump into here, Steve. So without further ado, let's talk about these in order of their roster percentage. So we're going to start with, I guess you could say, shallower league targets, because these are the guys with the higher roster percentages based on Yahoo. We just kind of chose as a default. And the first one is Orlando Arcia with a 74% roster rate. Now, immediate note is he got hit by pitch by Hunter Green tonight, left the game, as you mentioned, Steve, before we started rolling. But it does sound like the x-rays came back negative. So Arcia is still a relevant option for those 26% of the leagues where he's available. And you might need him because he's shortstop eligible, and it seems like all the shortstops are just dropping like flies, whether it's O'Neill Cruz or Corey Seager, Tim Anderson. It's just on and on. So what a position that was kind of top-heavy. It had some depth, but after like the top 12, 15 shortstops, it really fell off a cliff. So Arcia is the first candidate here, and we'll talk about a few others. Having a nice season. I remember there was some hype when he was with the Brewers. I kind of got burnt on that. All the hype was on Vaughn Grissom in the offseason, and then Arcia is kind of playing spoiler here. Off to a hot start, batting .333 with 2 home runs, 10 runs, 7 RBIs, and an .899 OPS and about 50 plate appearances. The barrel rate is up to a solid enough clip. I don't know. I mean, stuff under the hood doesn't look terrible to where maybe you could make an argument for Arcia having kind of a long-awaited breakout to fantasy relevance, at least. I don't know that he's going to be a season winner, but Is there something here for you, Steve?
And I think another thing that is kind of important, you hit on it a little bit, but people were kind of shocked that Vaughn Grissom was kind of sent down, and like it was assumed early in the offseason that Grissom would just take that role.
Good point.
And run with it. I think they extended Arcia to the Braves, and like the Braves are a good organization, so they know what they're doing. So maybe we should have paid a little more attention to what the Braves did, and you know, the fact that they gave him this job and this role.
He's a great glove too.
A great glove. I just don't know if he's going to be more than someone who could fill the gap until you know those shortstops come back. I don't see him carrying an close to 900 OPS. Maybe a 750 OPS with double-digit homers and a handful of steals. You know, that's the other thing. He doesn't really have the elite sprint speed, and I just don't think that he's a steals guy, at least anymore. I know he stole 14 bags in 2017 that kind of and had 15 homers with Milwaukee. I think that kind of led to the hype, and he's never stolen more than 8 bases since then. Has really only attempted 1 or 0 over the last few years. So it's not even like there's any bit of intent where it's like, okay, hey, he stole 5 bases. Maybe with the new rules, he can get 10 or 15. I just don't think that he, you know, has more than like 5 in him, which I think will hold down the value a little bit, just because I also don't think he's going to push 20 home runs. Like, I think it might be a solid average 10 home run stopgap guy. The fact that he's hitting 9th in the Braves order will keep those counting stats down. So I think it could be viable and is a good replacement, but I'm not like rushing to go pick up Orlando Arcia.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, I didn't realize, because I always kind of rated him as a decent speed guy, but you're right. He really hasn't attempted in honestly since like 2019. So without the steals, he's not a 20-homer guy. I think he might even be a little over-rostered, and I know it's the position's really shallow with all these injuries, but he's hitting 7th in the lineup. I know it's a good lineup to have exposure to, but I don't know. I think compared to the roster, that's with
Harris out as well, so you would think he would bump down when Michael Harris returns.
Yeah, so it's just compared to the roster rate of these other guys we'll get into, I'm a little surprised that Arcia is that high, because this is the time of the year where you don't really want like a vanilla floor guy. You're going for the dart throws that could explode and be league winners. So anyway, I think I'm with you. I think I'm out on Arcia, and for fantasy purposes, it'd be great if we see Vaughn Grissom sooner than later. But let's keep rolling. A lot of names to get to. And the next one we're looking at
Grissom, real quick of note, in nine games at AAA, has a homer, two steals, hitting .351, .442, .595 for a .1036 OPS. Obviously small sample, but he's only struck out 7% of the time and has walked 11.6% of the time. So doing everything he can to earn a call up here. And, you know, that seemed almost imminent if that hit by pitch was anything more than what it was. But I think it might be sooner rather than later for Grissom.
Yeah, no, and Arcia's AAV is like 2.4 mil, so it's that could be a super util type of contract. So, yeah, with you there. So, moving on to second guy we want to hit on here is Isak Paredes with the undefeated Tampa Bay Rays. Paredes, he's kind of like a cult hero, man. He's like Yandy Diaz before Diaz, like he's a reincarnate, but. I know that people love the plate discipline with kind of the dream of the pop because he's got a big frame, but he's yet to put it all together. And this season, it's starting to look like it might be happening. 297 average, three homers, eight runs, 10 RBIs, and 922 OPS. Now, he's historically been a splits guy where he really struggles versus right-handed pitching. Still the case to some extent so far this season, but it's actually been much better. His batting average so far, obviously tiny sample sizes, but the right-handed pitching, his batting average is around like 240, where in the past it was like around 170, 180. So if that's enough to keep him on the field and not be platooned, Paredes is interesting. Now, unfortunately, it's like all of the actual power metrics under the hood don't really seem to be following right now. So I have a tough time like making sense of Paredes, Steve. I think I have him on like one, like a deep one, like a 50 in NFBC. But like, are you interested in Paredes? Do you think he could put it together? And like, what would this breakout look like?
So I think, you know, Saris has talked a lot about it. How Paredes is one of those guys like what he gets the most out of his barrels because he just pulls the fly balls, and I think the Rays have kind of identified that and said, hey, pull your fly balls. That's all we care about. And what do you know? Like, if you look at his spray charts of three home runs, they're, you know, bombs down the left field line, just pulled fly balls for a righty. That's just everything. Like, all his hits, you know, his singles are to left field. So he's just out there pulling fly balls. That's what he does. Because looking back at it, like, the power metrics never really look great. Like, the max EV at best was, you know, 67 percentile. You know, barrel rate was fine. This year it's, you know, about average. Doesn't swing and miss, which is nice, but I think it's just kind of like a, you know, a StatCast cheat code. Yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly. He's not gonna be this, oh, look at this awesome StatCast or Pitcherlist player page. Like, who's this breakout? No, it's Isak Paredes, and he does this one thing. He pulls his fly balls, and that's what he's going to do and get the most out of it. And, you know, it might that average, I think, is going to come down. Like, the XBA right now is, you know, a lot lower than the 308. It's 215. Last year was 210. Like, I think he's a 220 hitter tops, right? But, you know, maybe he could pop 20 to 25 homers, which is a decent fantasy play, at least in deep leagues.
Yeah, it's a great point. Like, last year, his barrel rate just like a 6.4% below league average, but still 20 homers. And like you said, they are all dead pull. So yeah, that he definitely defies it there. The one thing that's kind of interesting about the batted ball profile so far this year, again, small sample, but the ground ball rate has dropped from 42% down to 26%. All in exchange for, you know, 9% more fly balls, 9% more line drives. So that is a good sign, at least.
Yeah, and, you know, with the shift, maybe that could help a little bit too. You know, no shift, maybe that'll help the average a bit. But hey, that's a decent sign because you want the guy to pull fly balls, and if you're not hitting it on the ground, that means it's a fly ball. So
yeah. So Paredes, 59% rostered, still out there quite a bit. And, I mean, you know, we talk about lineup exposure. Like right now, he's a guy who's been hitting. He hit third tonight in the lineup for the Rays, and you know he's kind of batted all over. But you know, usually in the middle part of that order. So I think a good option for Paredes. I like it more than Arcia. Moving over to our boy, Jared Kelnick. Steve, all it took was a full year of us hyping him up and then off season where we basically, at least me, have no shares for him to be piecing together what looks to be a breakout. He is hitting .351 with three home runs all in the past three games. A couple of steals to boot, five runs, five RBIs because he's not really hitting in a good spot in that order. The strikeout rate is still hovering around 30%, Steve. I think that's what the naysayers will point to. But you got, you know, Jeff Passan tweeting out that this breakout is happening. What do you think? Is Kelenic, are we buying it or not?
So I think there's some good signs and then there's some bad signs. I'll start with the good first. Yes, the strikeout rate is still, you know, around 30%. I don't know if we struck out today. I have 27% heading into today's game. But the walk rate is up. It's up to around 11%, which would be a career high at the major league level for him. And his contact rate is up. It's up to 78.3%. Last year it was at 69.5%, so not good. He's also chasing less, 3% less of the time to be exact. Another good sign for the batted ball profile and just your plate discipline. As far as his swinging strike, is down to 9.6%. Last year was at 14.7%. So, you know, from really good, really bad to like pretty good. So, you know, 55 percentile for whiff percentage, where last year or 2021 when he had the full sample, that was at 35%. So, you know, very good. All the power metrics look good. The hard hit percentage way up. Max exit velocity, average exit velocity, barrel percentage, all 90th percentile and above. The overall cold water, I think he's had one plate appearance versus a lefty. So we just don't know if he can do this at all versus lefties. And I don't know if that's – he had two more bats yesterday or today. So 0 for 3. With a strikeout versus lefties. The rest of his plate appearances, 34 of them have come against righties, so that's good. He's figured out how to hit righties. Obviously, you know, still striking out a little bit, but you would live with the 27% strikeout rate if all that comes with it. I just hope that this has earned him a chance to see lefties and play against lefties and maybe see if some of these gains can apply to left on left. Like, I think he's definitely earned that. Like, that's literally the only question. I would absolutely run to roster Jared Kelnick, you know, in those 44-45% of the leagues that he's not rostered in Yahoo. So yeah, I think it's happening.
It's fair. I mean, this is goes back to what we said, that like this is the type of guy that you should be adding this time of the season, and if it doesn't work out, you just move on. But the ceiling is so high for Kelenic, and they've even, you know, started to inch him up in the lineup to where he's been hitting sixth. Earlier this season, he was seventh, eighth. So, yeah, I'm all for it with Kelenic here. It was just 1 year ago, pretty much, that we were gushing about what could be with Kelenic. So, yeah, all systems go there. I think under-rostered for sure at just 55%. Moving to another guy that I feel is criminally under-rostered, and that is catcher Logan Ohapi, who we talked about a couple times in the offseason, Steve. Cold water was thrown on it when Max Stassi was supposed to break camp with the job, and then Stassi got the injury, and Ohapi is playing almost every day and making the most of it for sure, hitting .257 with four home runs, five runs, 11 RBI, and a .937 OPS. You will absolutely take that from a catcher spot. And Ohapi, if the name is new, I mean, he came over to the Angels in the Phillies trade with Brandon Marsh last year, but this is a guy who probably surged almost more than any other player in prospect rankings last year. He was actually a former 23rd rounder in the draft, But last year, he had 15 home runs in 75 games at AA, batting .275. So that's, you know, well over a 30 homer pace. And then in the 29 AA games with the Angels, once he came over, 11 home runs in just 29 games. So, you know, do some quick math there. 26 home runs in about 100 games across AA last year between Philly and the Angels. This guy definitely has pop that kind of emerged like late in his minor career, but he has really good OBP skills. And I don't know, man. I just wonder what is going on with only 48% rostered. I don't need a catcher in leagues that he's available in, but I feel like he should be rostered in all one catcher leagues. Your thoughts on Ohapi, Steve? Do you think this comes like down to earth, or do you think this is a legit option for maybe a 250, 2025 homer season?
The signs are that the K percentage will go up, just a 63.5% contact rate. His zone contact, so, you know, the pitches that you make contact in the zone, isn't as bad at 82%. You'd like that to be a little bit higher, but, you know, hey. I'm actually a little bit encouraged on that. The swing strike is at 17.7%, so that's a little high. I think it's going to be around like a 30% strikeout rate. He's striking out around 25% of the time, so maybe that's buoying the average up, but I have zero questions about the power, and, like, I am devastated that I have invested in Wilson Contreras, who is horrible, and then Logan Ohapi went like 10 rounds later and has four home runs. So I in any one catcher league where a catcher is struggling, like, I would make that swap. Like, Logan Ohapi is definitely a good enough for catcher one. Like, you don't care if your catcher hits .220 and hits 30 home runs, which looks like that's what Ohapi's going to do.
Yeah, it's interesting on the plate stuff, because all throughout the minors, he's had like a sub 20% K rate, and the walk rate kind of projects out around like 9-10%. So he's supposed to be a plate skills guy, but yeah, if it's not looking that way, and it also looked like the K rate was kind of climbing, since he's been in the majors, which obviously makes sense. But yeah, I just think you can do a lot worse, and in terms of his part of the battle for any catcher is just volume, and I think that's been something that's great. He's good behind the plate, that's a strength of his compared to some, you know, Gary Sanchez type of catchers. But he's been playing like, you know, four out of five games, so I think,
I don't think, you know, he's won the job. Like, even when Stassi's back, like, they can't. I know the Royals, the Angels are kind of dumb, but they're trying to keep Ohtani there, right? Like, they're not going to give this job back to anyone when Ohapi's hitting like this.
Yeah, and Stassi's time frame is possibly around the end of April, so we'll probably see what happens there in like 2 weeks, but I agree. Unless Ohapi gets really cold, I think they have to ride the hot hand for the Ohtani factor, mm-hmm. So. We will get to some more names here. Very exciting names, even though the roster ship is going down. But first, we're going to take our quick ad break, and we'll be right back. Okay, Steve, not the most exciting name, because it's a name that's been on the radar for several seasons. But I got to admit, when I was piecing the rundown together, I started to get a little interested in Austin Hayes with the Orioles. So Hayes so far this season, hitting .317 with three home runs, 10 runs, six RBIs, a steal, and a .1023 OPS. So red hot start for Austin Hayes. I know a lot of that. I think he had a 4-for-5 game that really propped up that average.
And a 5-for-5 game, I think the second game of the year.
So he's got two, like, mega hit games, but they still count. They still count.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely.
And with Hayes, a lot of it looks incredible under the hood, with the launch angle has moved up from 11 to 14 degrees, a 26% barrel rate. Had to double check that, and I'm going to do it again. That's just ridiculous. I mean, that would easily be top of the league. The hard hit rate is up. This is the age 27 season, which is kind of power peak. And I was also, I went back to just see what he was doing in spring training, and he was red hot in spring training, batting with a 333 batting average with four homers and a 1073 OPS. What do we think about Austin Hayes? He just got moved up to bat leadoff. I know that the Orioles are, like, stacked with their youth development. It seems like this might be, like, the last chance for Hayes. But do you think it's, you know, just a guy and he's kind of faking us out here? Or is there something here with Hayes?
I'm not really sure. This one's tricky for me. The biggest thing that jumps out is the O-swing. He chased close to 40% of the time last year, 39.7%. That's down to 27.5%. So that's a really, really good sign. Like, that's something that stabilizes quickly, since it's like a per pitch denominator, right? You have a large sample with that. So that's really, really encouraging. I was debating adding him in my home league the other day for Ramon Laureano, who's maybe another guy that was worthy of this list and has had a nice start to the season. But I'm kind of kicking myself that I didn't do it. So I don't know. Like,
the offers are concerning.
Yeah, the offers are concerning, and the fact that it's in a few games. I know it's back-to-back games now. But it was pretty ice cold after that 5-for-5 second game. Like, you know, if this was old Camden Yards without the great wall of Camden for a right-handed hitter, I would be absolutely all in. Like, you know, be super excited to have all the home games in the summer with Orioles there. You know, I really think that might cut, you know, 5 to 10 homers off of his expected total. Like, you look at just his spray chart, and you see two fly balls. It's like, oh, those would have been two more home runs had that old wall been there. You know, you kind of line it up. But I don't know. I really think that chase rate is something that is really telling. And just the fact that, like, he's never really hit the ball this hard. He's never batted the ball this hard. His sprint speed is up to, like, a career high. So who knows? Maybe it was or at least high since, like, 2019. You know, who knows? Maybe he's, like, fully healthy, was battling something. But, you know, the chase rate and the batted ball skills so far are pretty impressive. He has 30 balls in play, so 8 barrels on 30 balls in play. Like, it's not a nothing sample. I know it's not the biggest, but it's still encouraging. So yeah, maybe Hayes can come close to, like, that 9.1 barrel percent that he had in 2021 or exceed it a little bit and tap into some of that potential that we finally saw there. I mean, he's never struck out that much, considering the chase rates haven't been great. So, like, who knows if he's, like, not chasing and identifying the pitches that he wants to hit, and maybe that tells itself in the hard hit percentage. That's way up to 46.7%. That's, like, 7 points higher than any point in his career. So, I think I've sold myself on Austin Hayes, despite it coming in just a few games.
Yeah, and it, like, in a boring way, you know, he's been somewhat productive in the past. I mean, 2021. He hit .256 with 22 homers and, like, 70-70 on runs and RBIs. Like, that's useful, and that was only in 131 games. So if kind of the barrel and this little power breakout is for real, he's not that far off from being, like, a high 20s homer guy, and everything else is kind of gravy, whether he chips in on some speed or he hits .270 instead of .250 or .240. I would diagnose it as this. You know, if you're looking at options to add in outfield, they have a 3-game series against the White Sox, but then next week he could be if he gets through that White Sox series with a handful of hits, it might be worth at least a stream next week, because they got the Nationals and then they got the Tigers and the Red Sox. Then they got the Tigers again. So that, you know, he might have a favorable schedule kind of throughout the rest of the month. Where that could at least give you enough of a sample to say, like, is it real or do we move on? But yeah, kind of a name that flies under the radar, and I think worth worth just keeping an eye on. Put him on the watch list. All right, moving on to a sizzling name from Austin Hayes is Rays top prospect Taj Bradley, who came up tonight and pitched against the Red Sox. Again, worth noting because a pretty weak Red Sox lineup and, you know, definitely a target matchup. But Taj Bradley definitely caught my attention, Steve. I was watching some of the outing. Five innings pitched, three earned runs, but a couple of those came in the very last inning. Eight strikeouts for Taj Bradley. He sat 96 with the fastball. He touched 98. He even was mixing in a curveball, which wasn't really on like his prospect profile. So the question here for Bradley, because he's filling in for Zach Eflin, who's on like the 15-day IL, he really has to impress if he wants to keep this rotation spot. What are we doing with this? It's like it's one of those where you have FOMO if you don't add him, but it feels a little nerve-wracking that he's just going to get like sent down. Any advice on Taj Bradley or thoughts on the player as well?
I think it's pretty impressive. I would obviously run to grab him if he was available, just to sort of see what happens. A few people tonight in the Pitcherless Discord, shout out to PL Pro, PL Plus, join the Discord, and you can see this in real time. I did not watch this at the start, but a few of the people in Discord watching it were mentioning how he was getting away with a lot of hangers. He did get six whiffs on the fastball, and if you look at the pitch illustrator on Savant on the playoff break on the player breakdown for Taj Bradley, you see a bunch of those elevated four seamers outside the zone, and you know that's where you're going to get whiffs on fastballs outside the zone, which is great. However, he just got three whiffs on his secondaries, that being the cutter and the curveball. And if you look at where the cutter's located on that spray chart, it's all over the middle of the plate. Like a lot of these look like they could be hangers that, you know, a better offense or an offense that's, you know, clicking better at a time would absolutely demolish. So I like it. I think I would 100% grab Taj Bradley. I think it's great. I think, you know, the fastball is really encouraging to get that many whiffs on a fastball. Like that's a great base. It just looks like he might have gotten a little bit lucky on this start, a little bit. And I wish that there was like a, you know, elite slider or the curveball got a few more whiffs for me to be super, super excited about. But that being said, like, yeah, you absolutely have to grab Taj Bradley after you just struck out eight batters tonight. 35 CSW overall, so like still really, really good. Just be cautious. Yeah,
nine swings and misses for eight strikeouts is a little low, to be fair. And, you know, in that fifth inning, he looked pretty hittable. But I think it was at least nice that the Rays let him go out there for the fifth inning and didn't do the full kid gloves on him. His next start will be at Great America Ballpark. So that'll be an interesting test. A little bit better offense, but still pretty light, kind of a target matchup. And then I think after that, if he gets one more, it would probably come against either the White Sox or the Astros. So that would be the big test and probably the last one before Eflin comes back. So,
and then Glasnow coming too. So there's some reinforcements coming for the Rays.
Yep. Well, let's move to a Reds hitter. And it's Jake Fraley, who we talked about with the Mariners in past years. A guy who we were excited about and then we kind of cooled off on. But Fraley's kind of interesting, Steve. He's off to a hot start, hitting 370. He's got a homer, a couple steals, he's got the speed. Just three runs, but nine RBIs. What's nice about Fraley is he's taking walks. Right now he has a 20% walk rate, and he's hitting third for the Reds. So this is a guy just 29% rostered that is kind of sneaky for being that low on the roster rate. You know, he's going to get a lot of volume batting third. And, you know, so far so good. And it's a guy who I think is somewhat toolsy that we've had an eye on in the past. I think he's another guy who's kind of got a cult following out there. Any interest in Jake Fraley for outfield?
Yeah, I definitely think it's worth a follow and an ad where you need it in deeper leagues. That being said, it's just another guy that has very, very limited plate appearances versus lefties. He only has 6 plate appearances versus lefties. I think he sat a few games. So, you know, it's nice to play right. Like, I wish there was, like, a way you could say, hey, this is how many possible plate appearances he could have had versus the lefties, right? Like, how many did he miss? But he's definitely sat a few games where he, you know, he has 9 games played, I think, total on the year. Or, sorry, 15 games total this year. I don't know if that's right. I'm just looking at the totals on the splits. But whatever. The point being is that don't expect him to get many starts versus lefties. It doesn't look like the Reds are sort of just throwing him out there. You know, maybe if he continues to rake and then holds, you know, close to like the 300, 400, 500 line that he's trending towards and is walking as much as he does, maybe he earns some of that playing time. But yeah, I think it's encouraging. I think that, you know, there is some good power speed potential in here, and if he can get close to like 500 plate appearances, that could bode for like a 15-15 season with an average that isn't going to kill you. So whether you're playing lefties or not, like, whatever, like, in a weekly lineup, just keep him in, because, you know, unless you have like 4 lefties in a week, which is rare, like, he's still going to get you the numbers that you need, and better than what's on the wire. So I like it. I think that he's a great power speed potential and a great ballpark in a lineup that's kind of underrated.
Yeah, I think I was hearing, I want to say it was Scott Chu and Joe when they were talking on Hacks and Jacks, but I want to say it's like 24 of the Major League Baseball, like, rotations have at least 3 righties, and then, you know, most of those have 4 righties. So it's like, you know, I think you can live with that, you know, 4 out of 5 mm-hmm. games in terms of volume. But you're right, it's a good point. His splits are pretty brutal in past seasons. Like in 2022, he had like a 861 OPS versus righties, a 476 OPS versus lefties, just a 143 batting average. So definitely has a lot to prove to kind of give us confidence that he's not a platoon guy, for that matter. But nonetheless, I think Fraley, especially in OBP leagues with that walk rate, is a good guy for like 5 outfield leagues in OBP, kind of a must add in that format, I would say. All right, Steve, you and I have not had a chance to discuss Chris Bubich, which I know there's some of the top industry experts are saying, let's slow down before we ordain him kind of the pitching pickup of the season. But man, oh man, against the Giants, 6 innings, just 2 hits, 9 strikeouts, and 19 whiffs on just 76 pitches. You know, I've heard around the industry, there's a lot of people like tipping the hat to Lance Brozdowski, who does some really good work. Follow him on Twitter. But he kind of called the shot here with Bubich with his trip to Driveline, how he increased extension, he changed his arm slot, and some of those changes ramped his 4-seamer stuff plus number from 81 up to 112, with league average being right around like 100, of course. So Bubich is one that just 20% rostered is pretty crazy, knowing that this could be, I mean, all the signs under the hood is that this could be a major breakout. What are your thoughts, Steve, on Bubich? I added him in a dynasty league. I said, I gotta see what happens here.
Yeah, I really think that it's worth a shot. He actually got dropped in my home league. I can talk about this because he clears waivers tonight. So you'll have to help me if I should be putting in a bid or not. We'll do some would you rathers with guys on my actual team. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. I mean, the fastball velocity at 93 up from 91.9 last year, a full tick, is just insane. The swinging strike rate, 8.9% up to 18.8%. CSW is at 32%, which is like where the really good starters live. So yeah, it looks really, really good right now. And, you know, another thing that before, like, all the pitch modeling stuff, the biggest indicator in season in a small sample was strikeout matters. Walk rate, his strikeout rate is 30.2%, the walk rate at 2.3%. So very, very good stuff there. It's just a matter of whether you think this is going to hold. And I think you have to add him to find out. I'm definitely interested.
I wholeheartedly agree.
I guess I got thrown a bit.
Yeah, I mean, that velo range is such a critical thing. I know we talk about it a lot, but that it might not sound like a lot going from 92 to 93, but that's the range where you go from basically having an average fastball to when you're scooting up towards like 94, that's when, you know, that's a good, it's solid fastball. And that's important for him in addition to like the extension that he's now gaining. That's what makes like a Freddie Peralta's 94 read more like a 98 mile per hour pitch. So extension plus velo rise is all great from Bubich. Steve, who are you considering dropping? Let's do a little would you rather on this.
Chris Bubich or Tyler McGill?
Oh, I think Bubich.
Bubich. Oh, there was no hesitation either. The McGill's other guys, just,
I know he has a lot of upside, but I think McGill, and I grabbed him in another league, but I was watching and he's just not putting it together so far this season in a way. And I was listening to Nick Pollock on kind of the wrap up podcast where he's kind of talking about everyone's outings, and he's like the ultimate McGill stan. Mm-hmm. And he was even saying like it's not where it usually was. And so I think Bubich, man, just with that park and everything, I would do that one. But what else we got?
The other two fringe guys on my roster, three, I guess, actually, are Kenta Maeda, Josiah Gray, and Edward Cabrera.
Oh, man. I mean, I think because we don't know that he's not, like, breaking out, like, I lean Bubich quite a bit. Cabrera's a conundrum. I would say Maeda is a hold, but I think I would give him the nod over Josiah Gray and possibly over Cabrera as well. I loved Cabrera coming into the season, but man, he's all over the place, and that's
a little better today with the walks. Only two walks, I think, today, or one. Oh, hey, very good. So getting a little better there. That being said, Gray, you know, the fact that he stopped throwing the fastball and is throwing his secondaries, which are very good, is super encouraging. So I think I'm going to hold on to them there. Maeda, I think it's more just a wait and see. I think McGill out of those is the drop, like you said. The stuff just, despite the good results, the stuff just isn't what it was in that peak, you know, last April sort of. Tyler McGill's throwing 98. Now it's 93. It's not really as interesting. So yeah, I think that's the bit. There's 2 hours in between when this podcast release and when waivers clear in my league. So unless someone's listening at 1 a.m. Eastern, I'll be able to get my bid in.
Should be safe
without it being known. So we'll see.
I love it. Okay, we got 4 more guys to get to here, but we are going to take our second ad break and we'll be right back. All right, so Steve, back to the outfield here, and it's none other than Chaz McCormick with the Astros, who honestly is, we've kind of made jokes in the past about, you know, McCormick. Maybe it's because his name is Chaz McCormick, but he's putting together a nice little season here so far with a 275 average, a couple homers, 4 steals, and an 870 OPS, some decent counting stats as well with 7 runs, 9 RBIs. McCormick, what are your thoughts? I mean, I feel like he's a name who's come up on the pod in the past. Do we think this is legit and somebody who's worthy of our attention in that lineup, or are we kind of writing this one off as a pass here at 19% rostered rate?
I think the fact that, you know, he's batting leadoff for the Astros now and he's kind of taking that job and running with it is definitely caught my attention. I don't know how sustainable this is. Wow, he has 2 home runs with no barrels. That is crazy. Like, you know, all the underlying metrics don't look great. Okay, Fangraphs had him at zero. Savant has him at one, but still, he has two home runs with only one barrel. Like you have here in the notes, like none of the underlyings show that this is sustainable or anything more than like a hot run. But I mean, who knows if he's, you know, it's an age 27 season. Maybe there's something that could be put together. I was super excited about him coming in. You know, the fact that he has four steals, two homers. I think now looking at the underlyings, I'm a little bit more concerned. Like even the sprint speed is down despite the four steals. So I don't know.
Maybe the glass half full version though is that his barrel rate in the past has been like 10%, which is above league average. Yeah. So maybe he could, if he can just tap back into that. I cannot believe he's batting leadoff and Kyle Tucker is fifth in that lineup. Extremely annoying. When Altuve returns, he's probably going to, like, I'll be curious if they slide McCormick and the rest of the lineup or if they'll just drop him all the way back to like 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there, you know?
Yeah, they could. And I don't know. This looks like a profile that could go ice cold. I mean, you know, judging by his stats over the last few years, like that happens, you know.
You have to bet on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not horrible. Like a 776 OPS, 739 OPS last year. Like offense was way, way down last year. And he still hit 14 home runs in each of those two seasons. So in 119 games. So maybe there's a bit more power and it's just kind of like, hey, don't worry too much about the small sample exit velocity and max exit velocity and hard hit percentage, stuff that you shouldn't be worrying about in 25 batted ball events. Like maybe it's just like, okay, hey, pay attention to more of the surface numbers here and the fact that he's batting leadoff for the Astros. Like I think it's definitely worth rostering more than 19% of the leagues for the time while he is hot.
Nice. All right, moving on to kind of a utility corner infield guy for your rosters. It's Spencer Steer, another Cincinnati Red, who is off to a nice little start as well this season, hitting .314 with a couple homers, 5 runs, 5 RBIs. Steve, looking at the home runs, both of these were just total no-doubters, straight away, dead center field. One of them went like 440 feet. So Spencer Steer with kind of pop that I didn't know he had, and the max EV suggests that as well with 110.6, 10.7% barrel rate so far. I had heard a little bit about Spencer Steer coming into the season, but he's certainly kind of producing at the dish. The question is, if we're buying, you know, I think he would have to get moved up the order a little bit. He's hitting seventh right now, but it does look like against the lefties, they're moving him up to like bat second in the order. So Spencer Steer, kind of an interesting name here. Just, what is it, about 8% rostered. So much deeper league, but any interest in Spencer Steer for the Reds?
Yeah, I'm pretty interested. It's another like really encouraging profile. 12% walk rate, 17.5% strikeout rate, only chasing 21.6% of the time. That's really, really good, especially for a guy who, you know, he just had a small cup of coffee last year and was a big prospect and just came up. But it's another one. I just don't know if he's going to get the full playing time for the Reds. Like he's played, I think, 10 games total out of the – what now? We're at like game 13 now around in the season, maybe more than that, 15. So he's sat a bit, which kind of stinks. Like, you know, a team like the Reds, you would just hope that Spencer Steer would just get this job and run with it and play every day. I'm trying to pull up right now.
He hits lefties, too.
Yeah, he hits. He's a righty, though. He's a righty, right? I think.
Yes, you're right. But he does. But like, I mean, he hits righties. He hits righties and lefties.
Didn't start today. Like, kind of annoying that he's not playing every single day. Let's see. I'm trying to find like where the sits are. So today he sat. He played on the 11th, 10th. Maybe he has played mostly every day.
I think it was a day of rest today.
Day of rest. Okay, so I'm kind of wrong there, and that makes me a little more encouraged. Like, I think I want Spencer Steer on most of my rosters. Like,
it'd be nice if they moved him up. Being on the Reds, it'd be nice if they moved him up the order, because you see what he's doing, and then you see like just five runs, five RBIs. Like, it's already a bad lineup. But then when you're hitting seventh, that probably will be a lot of games where he only gets like three at bats, which stinks as well. But I mean, if he does this much longer, it's like, I mean, pulling up the Reds' batting order here, it's like, you know, who is blocking him? They got like Will Myers batting fifth, Vossler, who's been hitting well, batting sixth. But I don't know if he keeps it up. Like, TJ Friedl is hitting second in that lineup, so I don't know. It just seems like there could be room for him to kind of bump one of those guys, knowing that he's got plate skills, he's got some pop that he's kind of proving out right now. And first base, third base is kind of nice eligibility as well. So, yeah, I mean, just 8% rostered, though. Like, he's under-rostered, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so. Like, I was under the impression that he, like, wasn't an everyday player. Like, you know, whoa. Like, I think that this guy should be on a lot more rosters. And the next guy who we're going to talk about to put, you know, lean into my transition duties that I learned as a host last week is going to be a would you rather, and then there's maybe someone else on my team who I could throw out there as a name potentially that I might be dropping for him. So there you go.
It's a great segue. Great tease, and the name, which is kind of a big prospect name, is second baseman for the Twins, Edouard Julien. And for the spelling on your guys' searches, it's E-D-O-U-A-R-D, Edouard Julien, and just 6% rostered. Again, highly touted prospect. Steve, I believe we have him in our dynasty for Pitcherless League on Fantrax. So Julien, the name of the game is this guy is a walk machine. He has always had like 20% walk rate in the minors. You know, he just got called up. And the Twins had him today, eighth in the lineup against the White Sox. What do you know? He took a walk. He went 0 for 2 otherwise. But yeah, I mean, in the minors last year in Double A, 113 games. He had 17 homers, 19 steals, but probably temper the expectation on the steals. I think he's like a 40 grade speed. So I think you'd be thrilled if he got like 10 steals on the season. But even that's probably optimistic. That said, this is a guy in like a points league or an OBP league whose value takes a huge bump up. In a 5x5 league, tough to say like what this profile will look like. But Julien is a name that, again, he's a highly touted prospect. Should be a name at least on your radar in Edouard Julien. So I don't know if you got anything to add there, Steve. It's a good call on just like as a util guy. Would you rather on Steer versus Julien?
Yeah, that's what I'm debating right now. I scooped up Julien when it was announced that he got the call. You know, he batted eighth. I think he was removed in the later innings, probably for defensive purposes, which isn't a great sign. He took Joey Gallo's roster spot. So, and Gallo's starting a rehab assignment this weekend. So I don't know how long Julien will be up for and if they're going to give him enough of a chance to sort of earn that job. The fact that they, replaced him in the late innings isn't encouraging. They do have some guys, though, at Minnesota that's struggling. I know Nick Gordon, a guy that I liked and several other people liked. Not off to the greatest start for a lot of guys offensively in Minnesota. So I think there will be, some opportunities sooner rather than later. I just don't know if it's going to be now, and I think I should probably make the move to add Spencer Steer for him. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if your league doesn't have like walks or OBP,
yeah,
I think
it's OPS, it's OPS. So in a way, but yeah,
it's interesting. But at least Steer, I mean, he's still walking, you know, 12% of the time as well. So it's not a total trade off. I think you're going to get more volume from Steer, and yeah, they both probably read out at the same pop. I guess maybe the tiebreaker would be like batting average, and right now Steer's hitting .314. What was Julian at in the
minors?
Yeah,
it wasn't bad. It was not bad. I'm
290, 300.
Yeah.
So yeah, his
he does strike out a bit. So you know, I know he had a 300, 400, 490 line last year, but 25% strikeout, struck out 29% of the time last year. In a small sample this year, he struck out 32% of the time. So yeah, there is some swing and miss in his game.
I think Steer's got a better hit tool as well. Like his prospect grade is like a 50-60, and Julian's is like a 40. So, yeah, I would endorse it, man. I think you do that. The ballpark is another good tiebreaker. So I think that's a good move to make. I am getting ready to consider dropping.
Another drop that's potential for me. Not to interrupt you here, but
it went from
Brendan Dongovan to Brendan Dropovan. It's getting close.
Yeah, was hoping for more in Coors. That is for sure. Yeah. Just like two for 16
mm-hmm.
with five strikeouts, and those two hits were just singles. Yeah, we got a series against the Pirates, Steve. I think you got to at least ride it out there. The problem is, if it breaks right, the FOMO is going to be brutal if you dropped him, because he's still batting leadoff for the Cardinals. And gosh, like the spring training, the plate skills from last year, like it's so close to being a great breakout if it just clicks in. But yeah, it's been rough there. The one I was going to bring up is I have Joey Weimer as a kind of a util for me, and the guy's gone 0 for his last 12 with like seven strikeouts in there. So I you know, this show is helpful for me because I'm trying to figure out who I'm replacing, and Spencer Steer has my attention.
Unless you need steals, I would go Steer over Weimer.
Yeah, I'm good on steals. I got rabbits. I got Horner and Kwan and everything. So there you go. Maybe we'll both ride out with Steer.
I just did it. I dropped Julian for Steer.
I love when you hit the live show transactions. That's a WAF classic.
Yeah.
Last name on the list is White Sox shortstop Lenin Sosa. This is, again, looking for, you know, any kind of streaming help. If you lost Corey Seager, Tim Anderson, O'Neill Cruz, any of these guys. Lenin Sosa, for being just 1% rostered, I think he deserves a little more attention than that. Today, he debuted, was seventh in the lineup for the White Sox. 1-for-4 and a home run off of Joan Duran. So that is one of the nastiest closers in the game. So that is encouraging. And last year in 57 games in AAA, Sosa went .296 with 9 homers and 3 steals. So that kind of profiles out to, you know, 15 homer, 10 steal type of profile, but with a good hit tool. You know, it's interesting to see, you know, and even a little bit more pop than that in AA last year for Sosa. So, you know, not much more. I'm like not sprinting to a waiver wire to grab him, and Anderson will probably be back in like 2 or 3 weeks. But, you know, in a position that's pretty shallow, I feel like you could do worse than Sosa. But what do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I like it. Name kind of caught me by surprise, I guess, when he was called up. You know, the fact that he was hitting .448 at AAA, people were like, whoa, like, you know, check this out. But it's something that I think, you know, especially with the injuries that have happened in shortstop, I think it's worth a shot. Like, I would think, you know, if Arcia was healthy, like, I think I would prefer Sosa's to Arcia. Maybe it's a victim of sort of the unknown thing and the fact that Arcia has been around forever, and you know, we sort of know what he is at his peak. But it's an interesting power with maybe a little bit of speed.
What are the combo. Plate skills? Let's look up the plate discipline here. That's maybe the one.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a small sample in the MLB. If you throw that out, last year, like, you know, it was a 17% strikeout rate and a 7.3% walk rate with those nine homers and three steals with the .296 average at AAA last year. Never was above 23%, and that 23% was, you know, after he got promoted to Double A from High A, after posting, you know, 103 WRC plus at High A, and then struggled a little bit with that 23% strikeout rate in Double A for his final 33 games in 2021. When he repeated the level in 2022, which is a good sign, he cut that down to 13.8%. Then he was promoted to AAA, and it was just 17.4%. So pretty good on the strikeout rates, average walk rates. Like, yeah, I'm a bit interested in, you know, especially in deep leagues. I think, you know, in this week's Fab run, like TGFBI, he'll probably be a name that might get some dollars thrown at him.
Yeah. I think the unknown element, like you mentioned, and the fact that, like, when you put the high minors together last year, it was 119 games. He had 23 homers.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically hit, you know, .315 or something. So, yeah, I think, again, just 1% rostered, it's like, you know, it's a very good NFBC fab bid, because this is the type of guy who will be available, and maybe you could get away with, you know, kind of a sneaky low bid of, like, I don't know. What do you think, just on the fab game? Something like the 30s?
I don't know. Unless, like, he goes off this weekend, like, yeah, I would think you can get him for, like, $55, something like that. And then, you know, not a – maybe, you know, 5 to 8% of your bid should be able to get it.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe less. You know, I don't know if it, like, what the playing time situation is. Moncada shouldn't be out long term. But I think worth a flyer. Like, I would definitely throw – you know, $20 to $50 on them out of 1,000 for sure.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, they got Elvis Andrus. They got, you know, it looks like it's second right now, Romy Gonzalez. But I wonder if they could kind of super util if he does end up performing well. Another thing is Tim Anderson. This might not be the last IL stint of the season for Anderson.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, for sure.
For a best.
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't a Moncada replacement. It was an Anderson replacement, which you know, is more long term.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that rounds us out, guys. A lot of names, but 'tis the season for scratching and clawing at the waiver wire. So thank you guys for tuning in, listening to Wins Above Fantasy. We will be on every Thursday this season. I'm Van Burnett. You guys can follow me on Twitter at @Van_verified. Steve Giswelli is at @Stav8818. And the show is at Wins Above Pod. If you guys enjoy it, please go out, give us a rating, review. We much appreciate it, and it goes a long way. But that wraps us up for episode 95. Thanks for talking baseball with us. We'll talk to you next week.
It's great having you back, man. Thanks for talking baseball with us, guys. Later.